Anything Goes. I'm your 5-wing-4 host, Madison.
And I'm your 9-wing-1 host, Caden.
And this is a podcast about the Enneagram. Let's start off with some disclaimers. First disclaimer, I'm moving this up to the top of the list. We go on massive tangents. Most of the time I'm able to cut them out, but sometimes I'm not able to. And I wanted to lead with that because Caden and I went off on a tangent about our recording stuff while we were recording. And we were like, oh no. How have we been talking about this?
Like the first 20 minutes is just not usable now.
Yeah. So that one's definitely getting cut out, but I don't know how many we will be able to cut out. So
we'll see. Yeah. We'll see. Speaking of headphones and recording stuff, you should probably put some in. We're not safe for work. We do swear. Sometimes we cover explicit topics, although it's never planned, but aforementioned tangents kind of lead us that way sometimes.
We planned it before because we had that whole segment on like sex and the Enneagram. Fair. And we are going to do a whole episode on that one book, the Anne Gadd book.
Right. Sometimes it is planned. Most of the time it's not planned. It's just occasionally it comes up because it do be like that sometimes. We're not Christian. We have a lot of queer content. We did tangents already.
You know what I'm just realizing? We put queer as a disclaimer. Should be the default.
Yeah, I mean,
we've been doing that for 2 years. If you don't know that we're gay by now, and like if you're just tuning into us, like why this episode? Like most people when they tune into us, they start with their like type episode. That is if they're going to jump into the middle at all. So if you're here and you don't know that we're gay, I don't know.
I'd like to think I've gotten progressively more gay over the past 2 years. So hopefully it becomes more and more obvious and evident.
You definitely, the thing is you've gotten straighter over the years, but you have become, I mean, on a technicality.
On a technicality, maybe. We have social media that you can follow us on for, I don't even know what we post on there. I'm really bad at
social. So that's one thing. You know how I was like, you know what, my New Year's resolution is to post on social media more for this, you know, pretty much all I've been doing is like Reddit stuff that isn't even tied to our actual podcast account. And I'm like, I've been like letting myself get away with it because I posted on Reddit and I'm like, oh, it's fine. But none of it is actually tied to our podcast. And I'm at the quarter of the year mark.
And you're failing.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what my resolution was. So you're doing way better than I am.
I've kept up with most of mine, like going to the gym 3 times a week. I've been doing that. I'm also probably going to sign up for a dance class. Tangent. But you know what? It's the quarter of the year. This is my reminder and your reminder. I'm going to do it this time. Catch us next podcast. Caden can hold me accountable.
Sure.
I'll just catch up. It's just like 8 posts.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, and this is your wake up call. If you're listening to this, what about your New Year's resolutions? Are you doing them? Have you forgotten them like Caden?
I'm going to have to go back and listen to our episode to figure out what I did.
We're only at a quarter of the year. You can turn it around. Let's do it.
Our social media, our Twitter, if you want to follow us there, Maddie will be posting more, is at anythinggoes. Our email is anythinggoes@gmail.com. You can email us your comments, questions, concerns. I don't know. I've never gotten any. We don't get a lot of feedback, period, to get negative feedback.
We don't even get answers to the podcast questions. We do the question of the month, and I've gotten 2 answers from social media.
So I got 1 answer. And it's from my partner, so she kind of has to. Speaking of, do you want to move into the question of the month?
Actually, so we have a Patreon account, link in the description. But actually, it depends on where you are. Some we have the shortened description. Go to our website. You can find us and you can donate to us. We had a tier that I have removed because someone bought it. That basically, if you bought it, I would join a cult and buy this really expensive book from said cult. And we got a patron who did that for us. Once again, another shout out to our benefactor, our patron. She would like to remain anonymous. But just a shout out to you again. I'll be sending you an email update in just a second after we finish recording this. I finally got a hold of the people and have an interview scheduled with them for this coming Friday. So yeah, and this has been after like a bunch of games of email tag, but yeah, so we finally got a date this Friday. I'm going to interview, hopefully I'll be able to buy that book and we can learn. Next update should be about how that should, once again, cross your fingers because of how long this has taken, should have an update on whether or not I get to join the cult and get to buy the book. So,
woo.
So now we can go into the question of the month.
Okay. Do you want to refresh us on what we asked?
Yes. So our question of the month is, what should absolutely be a law but just isn't? And it's something that you think should be just very obvious. So on Reddit, I got two answers. And why don't you go ahead and do a list as well? I'm pulling these up.
So my partner, we're specifically in this, wanted to get the answers of the frustration object relation triad, which is what we're going to be covering today. My partner is a 7, which is a part of that. And recently she has been on, I say recently, it's recent as in like the past several months, has this thing about how parking lots should all have solar panels above them. Because it generates green energy, it keeps your car cooler during the summer, it's a more efficient use of space, and it's just, she says, to quote, it's so simple that I'm like, is everyone in politics brain dead about it?
I agree. One of my main things is maximizing space. I was just talking about this with KJ, how I think a lot more places should have parking garages instead of just parking lots. Like we went to Disney, we went to Epcot, and huge, massive parking lot where you have to walk like so far to even like just get to Epcot. And I was like, think about how you could maximize the space where if you built a parking garage, you could fit all of these cars in a much smaller space and expand the park and make more money that way.
Yeah. Imagine how much energy you generate if you put solar panels
on top of that. Yeah. I was thinking, I was like, those should go on the parking garages. So she is very correct. I wholeheartedly agree. And I am very pro parking garage. Maximize the space, turn some of those parking garages into gardens or just or parking lots into gardens and just have a little parking garage with solar panels. So on to our responses, our Reddit responses. So we got one from a 1-wing 2, which is in our frustration triad. They said, yeah, just some spelling and grammar mistakes. And it's basically that they think that discrimination should be illegal. It would be illegal to discriminate against someone because of ability to patronize your business. I mean, there are kind of already laws about it, but they are not that strict. This would include getting in your car like Lyft and Uber too. They kind of missed the mark a little bit, but they are super against discrimination. Then we got an 8-wing 7 who is not in the frustration triad, but we don't have really any others, so I'll just share it. If you have a dog and if it shits, you don't clean it up, the dog gets seized and the owner gets put down. So very 8 response. Also the 8 said, ugh, under the 1-wing 2 response. And I can't tell if they're saying, ugh, like, oh, discrimination is awful, like, ew, discrimination, or like, erg, this comment, discrimination should be legal. I can't decipher it.
I don't know if I've ever met an 8 that's just like, hell yeah, discrimination. You know?
But the problem is the way it's typed is just, maybe it's just the 8's energy of just aggression that's like, I don't know. We didn't really get comments for this one. And you know what? I'm blaming you, listener, because if you had responded to our last episode, we'd have more to read. So if the question of the month content is lacking, you only have yourself to blame.
There you go.
Maddie went to 8 there. I channeled that aggression.
Yes.
I got triggered from that 8, and that's, yeah. So I don't really have anything more on the question of the month.
I think the funniest thing is that it's all the petty little shit, though. Like, yeah. The discrimination stuff is big, yeah. But, like, when I think about the frustrations triad and, like, those types and what they get really, really up in arms about, it's all the petty little shit. Mm-hmm. My sister she's a 1, I think, used to be really mad at me for chewing too loud.
My dad is a 1. I did not bother to ask my father, because my father has gone down sewer drain pipeline that is like Fox News media. So if I were to ask him, he'd be like, illegal immigrants should be kicked out from our, you know. I don't really have enough from the frustration triad to do that. Oh, you know what? No, I can pull this. Lily, my friend Lily, is a 4. And she has said this to me multiple times, and I also agree with it. It should be illegal to manufacture clothes without doing a full range of sizes. So you shouldn't be able to stop at like just extra large. You should have to continue and go up to a 3X, maybe a 4X, so that like it's not discrimination against bigger bodies, and that it should be considered discrimination if you're not offering that as an option. I agree with. I like that. There are not enough plus size options. And it's not even like...
For men, they should do the opposite, where they just make really small clothes. Because that's the problem that I have.
Yeah.
So that all the men are like a foot bigger and twice as big as me.
Clothing sizes are fucked up. And they should put like a federal regulation on them. Especially, you know how an extra large at one shop will be not an extra large in another shop?
Okay. That's some like women clothing bullshit stuff there, because men's clothing is much more standardized in terms of consistency.
Mm-hmm. I really think that there should be a federal regulation. And my type 4 friend also thinks that. So I'll keep that in. They should federally regulate sizing standards. I think it has gotten to be that much of a problem, because like it's to the point where I cannot comfortably order anything online,
right?
Or even going into a store and really buying it without trying it on. Like, I have a guess, but like I can't just be like, oh yep, extra large, that'll fit me.
Right. I don't know about federal regulation, but there might be like a, I want to say a guild, but like I don't know if that's the right word for it. But you know how larger industries will have like an industry standard organization that sets rules for them. So it's, you know, where it's like a, hey, if you want it to be certified via this organization, these are the guidelines you have to follow. And like, you're perfectly allowed to operate outside of that, but you don't get as much business.
Yeah, agreed. All right, that's all I have for question of the month.
Okay.
So moving on, we are doing the object relations triads. And just a brief recap, object relations is a psychological like theory that originated outside of the Enneagram. We went way more in depth in our last episode. So if you want to do that, go check that out. You can just listen up until that point and jump to this episode for your type. But the briefest of recaps is it's a theory that contradicted Sigmund Freud's theory about how personality develops. And it has to do with your caregivers and caretakers. And some theories focus more on the mother, but what your attachment style was like with your caregivers. And so a bunch of Enneagram experts and people have taken that, taken the three types of attachment, which are rejection / relationist. Well, actually, relationist was the like,
it's another triad thing.
Yeah, that's a triad thing.
It's object relation theory.
Yeah, object relation theory. And
there's attachment, frustration, and rejection.
Yes.
Of some folks break it down as like a protective influence in your life, a nurturing influence in your life, and like a belonging or pull sometimes, or like, I don't know, the different people have different words for it. Sometimes it's also called the harmony triads instead of object relations.
Yeah. Got a lot of different terms going on for just this one kind of thing. Do you know who did the pragmatist, idealist, and relationist?
That is the problematic guy. Christopher Huertz.
Yes.
Yes.
So Huertz relabeled these. Should we even use these? I don't know. They kind of work. He relabeled the attachment style as pragmatist, the frustration style as idealist, and the rejection style as relationist. I like rejection style for 5s, 8s, and 2s better.
Yeah.
Though I will say I like frustration better for 7, 1, 4, but I do like pragmatist better for attachment.
Yeah. I don't know if he's the one that labeled them that, or if he's using sources who have talked about it that way.
Yeah.
I would have to go look it up. which I'm too lazy to do. So you're just going to have to, you listener, you can look it up yourself if you want to. There's stuff out there.
So in terms of the Enneagram, how Enneagram researchers, enthusiasts and stuff have placed, or how they use object relations in terms of the Enneagram, is that it's how you kind of connect to people around you, how you connect to groups, how you connect to partners. So quote, object relations is a theory that comes from a psychoanalysis that states, in a very small nutshell, that our first relationships as babies form the expectations of our adult relationships. So it's basically just how your expectations in pretty much any adult relationship, friendship, romantic, work, all of that. And today we are covering frustration/idealist, depending on what you're reading. That is type ones, type fours, and type sevens.
Let's dive a little bit more into what frustration means in this context.
Yes. So frustration, I'll just go ahead and start with this quote because I really like this website. It's the Fitzel, F-I-T-Z-E-L website. Link is in our show notes in our website. Quote, people with the frustration object relation know what will make them happy, but they feel they seldom have it. However, once they find the source of their happiness, they tend to become disappointed and disillusioned with it. As a result, they become frustrated as they begin their search again. Their sense of self is based on the search for an ideal. These types need to remember that they can find contentment by accepting their present experience. I really liked that explanation. I love all their explanations on that website.
Yeah, they're pretty good and concise.
And so this brings me into another source that I will be using. And that's just general attachment styles, which is another psychoanalytic theory. I think it stems from the object relations. So there are like four types of attachment, which are secure, insecure, anxious, preoccupied, insecure, dismissive, avoidant, insecure, fearful, avoidant. And they can break down to secure, which is, so the person who has a secure attachment has a positive regard for themselves and their partners. And insecure, anxious, preoccupied attachment has a negative view of themselves and a positive view of others. The insecure, dismissive, avoidant has a positive view of self and a negative view of others. And then the fearful avoidant is unstable and fluctuates. And it sometimes I'm really great and others are really bad. And sometimes I'm really bad and others are really great. And sometimes everyone's bad. Yeah. So I will be pairing those up. I found a helpful website that says that within each triad, each type is more inclined to one of those types of attachment. So for instance, within the frustration triad, the seven is tied to anxious preoccupied, the one is tied to fearful avoidant, and the four is tied to dismissive avoidant. And so as we go through each type, we'll discuss it a little bit more. But I like putting those two together because I feel like they relate very well to each other.
Any other comments about the overall?
No, I think it's just the main thing to focus on is the disillusionment, and like they set expectations that really no one can meet is the problem. Right. And that's going to be different. What expectations they set is going to be different for every type, but no one can live up to it. So
yeah.
So moving into ones, I'll go ahead and I'll read more about their attachment type. So the type one is the fearful avoidant attachment type. So this one's the mixed. It's a negative view of self, negative view of others, and sometimes it fluctuates. Type one's main thought in regards to relationships, or their first thought, is the relationship isn't good enough, or the relationship isn't perfect. And so type ones are in pursuit of a good partner, and they are heavily influenced by societal ideals. So like the nuclear family, the nuclear household. You have some wonderful quotes.
Some of the main features of ones through this lens is that they have unrealistic expectations for themselves and others. And that creates a lot of like disapproval. And that's stemming from disapproval of their protective caregivers' imperfections. Like they see whoever they see is as like providing protective guidance to them when they're younger. They see the flaws in that. and they're like, oh, no, I'm going to go take care of my own protection there. And so they become like super rigid as a response. And I have a quote here I can read. Ones are searching for ideal autonomy. That means perfection and complete self-control. Ones focus on what's wrong or out of place in a given situation. They become frustrated when they see that things won't live up to their standards and when they feel obligated to improve everything. Their sense of self is based on this frustration. It shows that they still care about making things better. So they can build an entire identity around being unfulfilled by the current circumstances and kind of martyr themselves to that. Like, it makes them inherently better to be striving for something greater instead of focusing on things that will actually make them happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's very, sometimes we have disagreed with content creators and Enneagram people on like where they place ones, but I definitely think ones are definitely the fearful, avoidant, and frustration. Like, I think they fit that square on, especially with the mixed of like negative view of self, negative view of others. And sometimes that like sporadic, like ever fluctuating change because.
Well, what I would point out here, if you go get an Enneagram circle and look at it and look at the different triads we're working here, we've got two different triads that we're operating with. Then also look at the lines of integration and disintegration for the one. They line up perfectly with that 7 and 4 that we're talking about. So they're right smack dab in the middle of the frustration triad in terms of when they integrate, they're still at frustration. And when they disintegrate, they're still in frustration. So I feel like the ones are a great number to talk about here because it's so prevalent in how they're operating in the world that even when they're in a place of, you know, like greater health or a place of lesser health, that's still part of their core personality.
That's, hold on, now that I'm looking at this integration, disintegration, because like when we did, so the nines.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 9, 6, 3 is all a circle.
It's all, well, it's all a circle, but also they both integrate and disintegrate to different parts. So like 9 is attachment. They, oh no, wait, no, never mind. That one's a circle. You're right. I was looking at something else.
So that one's specific. In particular, because it's a circle, but the other
I was looking
two,
at the wrong line. I was like, 9 doesn't
so
disintegrate.
When we
7?
Cover when we cover our last object relations, the 8 will take on that role as being right in the center of both integrating and disintegrating to the same object relations triad.
Okay, so 1s and then 4s we're doing, which 4s they disintegrate to reform and integrate to rejection, which that's very interesting. And then our 7s integrate to rejection and disintegrate
to frustration. Yeah.
So, so both
for the 7 and the 4s, leaning into that frustration is a sign of further disintegration.
Ooh.
But for the 1s, it's a little bit trickier because the 7 will also experience the frustration. It's just, it's more. I want to say self-centered. That sounds bad. I don't mean that in a judgy way. I literally mean that in ones you need to focus on yourself more, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very cool. I just love all these diagrams of just like how they, what little triangles we can make. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things about this theory in general, like the object relations, that I have a harder time buying is whenever a psychological theory claims to know that you operate this way because of something that happened in your childhood, I'm like, that's a little bit hard to prove. Mm-hmm. Do you buy the idea that they're selling that for ones, it's a disapproval or detachment from protective caregiver?
I was actually thinking about that while you were saying it, because my immediate gut reaction was like, that makes so much sense because my dad had a very like troubled childhood when he was growing up. His dad was an alcoholic, left his mom with like 4 children and refused to pay any sort of child support alimony. And so then his mom, my grandmother, turned to basically, she worked a job, but at night she was basically a sugar baby. And that's how she fed her kids. And my dad didn't like that because she went out with some very rich men who had families, and their sons would often beat up my dad for her like ruining like the family. So I was immediately like, yeah, he has a lot of focus on like what they did wrong and how he would never do that and how that impacted. But then I was thinking about your sister and about how, I mean, no parent is perfect ever, of course.
Yeah.
But like your parents co-parented so well. I mean, to my knowledge, they did a really good job. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't grow up with you guys and I've never met them in person.
I mean, I think my parents are pretty fucking great. I think we had a pretty awesome childhood. But when I think about, I think this is what got me at first. Because when they say protective caregiver or nurturing caregiver, you kind of assign that to like one person or the other in the relationship. But really, I think when it's talking about that, it's talking more about the like one person can have both of those energies in them. Mm-hmm. And it's what are you receiving from them and what are you lacking from them? So while I think my mom was very nurturing, I think that, you know, my sister had a rebellious phase in high school, like a lot of teenagers. And a lot of what she had to critique my mom about was not about her being unnurturing, but about her like lifestyle choices and her like situation and stability overall, which is like, you're not living the kind of life that I expect you to live. And a lot of that is based on, it's not necessarily about protecting you from threats or feeling threatened. It's about the amount of stability in situations. Like, you know, we moved apartments a fair bit. My mom had a really freaking awesome job when we lived on the East Coast. And then when we moved to the West Coast, she couldn't find one. And she worked bars, night shifts at bars for a long time and has always been much more sociable. And so that meant like more people coming into our life that were alternative and very like free spirit, you know, so a lack of structure maybe being the complaint there and not a lack of protection or physical safety.
Question. So I know your sister is the oldest child and as an oldest child myself, there are like parents tend to shift when they need to parental responsibility onto the oldest. Do you think that some of those things that like your mom working nights, your mom, you know, doing these things shifted an uncomfortable amount of responsibility onto your sister at times? And that might be why she was more rebellious, more.
I mean, I would have to ask her. I don't know her experience with that. The other thing, though, is that my mom was not a single parent. Like, our dad was always there. So I don't know if it was imposed.
Being the oldest, I think that sometimes our language regarding children, even if we don't mean to, can shift it. I don't know. Whenever we would get in trouble, my mom would come down like harder on me. Like, you're the older kid. You need to do better. And even like when I'm in the schools, if kids are in the hallway and they're in lines and their lines aren't like good, they're being loud, rowdy, running, will be like, first graders, you need to be modeling this for the kindergartners. And it's like, they're not even that much different in age, but we'll still hold the like older kids more responsible.
Yeah. I think I was definitely favored in some ways.
Yeah. Do you think there might be more of a possibility for oldest children to lean towards maybe oneness, eightness,
sevens,
a couple of those like frustration or highly independent tracks because of them?
Probably sixes
too. I could see it. Yeah.
I could see a lot of sixes being more responsible.
I don't know. And I'm sure there are
plenty. I think that the whole head center is like probably older siblings.
Yeah.
That's my theory. I think the whole head center is probably.
I don't know. And I know a fair amount of like fours, I'm thinking specifically, and that like heart center. Well, I guess their frustration. I don't know.
Every four I've met has been a younger sibling.
Yeah. I've met mostly twos as younger siblings, but there are the occasional two that is older, like my partner.
Tangent. anything else you want to talk about for once?
I don't think we need to talk as much in the like levels. I think this makes more sense and we don't necessarily. Yeah. Because like with nines, it was like how nines were mixed. Negative self, negative of others. And we were like, well, how does that compute? How does it work? And it just looked weird, but I think we were able to figure it out. Whereas ones, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. Negative self, negative of others, just because their expectations of everyone and themselves is just so high that it can never be met. So of course negative expectations of just everyone, or negative feelings towards everyone.
Okay, well, let's move on to fours now.
Fours, they are the dismissive avoidant type. So that's positive view of self, negative view of others. Okay. And so the type four's common thought on relationships are, I'm deep and you're not on my level. So fours at lower levels are identified with their individuality in depth and may be prone to believe that others are more shallow or uninteresting or boring. And so they can develop superiority complexes, inflated egos, can be prone to even some narcissism in the much lower level.
According to the sort of parental caregiver origin theories, fours are frustrated by both their nurturing and protective caregivers. So they compensate by becoming nurturing and protecting of themselves. And they kind of self-isolate that way, which just makes mm-hmm. them that little unique yeah. bubble island.
Mm-hmm.
It creates intense introspection as they strive to find authenticity. And it also creates this insatiable need for affectionate attention, which they want to manifest by finding the ideal, you know, like an idealized partner, mm-hmm. and not in a romantic sense necessarily. It could be one individual, it could be a group of individuals, but it's just like someone who will completely understand and appreciate the four. They'll focus on the negatives of other people and themselves. They won't want to show you their negative parts necessarily, mm-hmm. and they won't necessarily tell you the negative views they have about you. It'll just be a little internal monologue there. This isn't mm-hmm. part of the text. I'm just like inferring based on fours that I know. you know,
yeah.
Like when a four is judging you, you won't necessarily have an idea that that's what's happening. And they're yeah. not necessarily rude about it either. But I do feel like there's always that little bit in the background when they get into the negative headspace. It's like, okay, I'm just going to shut down.
Yeah.
Do you have a four experience like that?
Oh, you know what? I kind of do. There was this one time, there's this little shop back in my hometown, and we were just doing window shopping, and this shop sells like, it's basically for like Wiccans and stuff. And it's got like all the crystals and, you know, that kind of thing. We went into it and the storekeeper was like being like, oh, I'm kind of mystic and, you know, that kind of thing. And was basically trying to like read us, right? And so I went in with my four friend. He told my four friend, he was like, my perception is that you're the more creative person in this friendship. And I was like, I'm sorry, excuse me? And my four friend was like, yeah, no, I'm definitely the more creative. Now, bear in mind at this time, I was in college for theater. I was getting an arts degree. I graduated summa cum laude, like excellent at art. I was winning. I had just won a competition for like literally like most creative entrance video. I had also just won an essay writing contest. I wasn't even a creative writing student, but I entered a competition against them and I won. And I was like, I mean, not to say that Lily isn't creative. Personally, I would say that we're very similar. And I would say that we're pretty much exactly the same level of creative. But for her to just have like, no, I am the creative partner. And now you're not appreciating that I'm more creative than you. You can't appreciate my creativity. And we had a little fight over that. Because I was like, there is no way that you're more creative than me. I will go for even.
It's interesting. What's interesting there to mm-hmm. me is that there's that inherent comparison, which is the like, it's not that you are creative and I am also creative, but in a different way, mm-hmm. right? And you can't really compare the apples and oranges. It's like, part of the self-identity is based off of that mm-hmm. comparison to other people and being like, I am creative, therefore I must be more creative than you as a creative.
Yeah. The other part of that like messed me up is she was talking about how she hasn't been like painting in a while, that like she had pretty much stopped all of her hobbies because she was working too much and she had no interest in making like creativity her job. Whereas I was like, creativity and like arts is my passion. That's why I'm making it like my career goal. We got past it. I still think that she thinks she's more creative than me. And the thing is, I know it doesn't make me any less creative. And it's not, and I also don't think she's not creative.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like, you know, that five competency, like I made creativity and arts my like thing that your I'm going to be. Yeah. And so to be like, someone who has no degree in it, who never even considered pursuing a degree, to think that they are more creative than me.
So And I'm going to wrap this back around to our literature here, because the interesting thing is fours want validation and attention, which obviously that shop clerk was giving to your friend. And they think the way that they're going to get it is being distant and different from other people. So possibly an explanation could be that by not distinguishing herself or accepting being distinguished, it threatens that sense of validation and attention, right? Mm-hmm. And it also threatens your ability to connect with and get your emotional needs met with other people, right? Because you have, you want that affection and attention, but that creates this self-fulfilling prophecy as that strategy doesn't work very well. You can't draw away and just, you know, differentiate and distinguish yourself from other people and expect them to just follow you just because, right?
Yeah.
Like people will reciprocate the kind of vibes you're putting out. So if you say, no, I'm not going to do anything, they'll be like, okay, cool. And then they leave. And then it reinforces that sense of self and that frustration about, oh, well, I'm different though.
Yeah. I will also say that, so I went to a liberal arts school and I got an arts degree. And especially when you're dealing with actors, there are a lot of fours that get mixed up in there because they want that attention. They want the spotlight. They want everyone looking at me and noticing me. Not that there weren't other types, but it was very much like a four being drawn in. And fours, the problem is they, because they're so easily threatened, they don't want to be friends with anyone who's, especially at that lower level, they don't want to be friends with anyone who could potentially be better than them at their, what they consider to be their identity.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly, I'll see that with like a lot of fours. If a four is like, I'm a cook, they want to be like the best cook. They want to be the friend that is the cook. And like, that's their thing. And if another friend wants to host a dinner party, it's like, but that's my thing. Like I'm the dinner party person.
Mm-hmm.
And heaven forbid that that person throw a good dinner party, you know? And it's the same thing with actors. But the other problem is that they want people to share their same interests.
They want to have same interests, but they want to be better than those than people at the interests.
And that was such a hard thing. Actors fight so much, like at a college level, like it's so petty and catty. And there will be like a clique that are like the best friends this week. And then just on-site enemies the next week. And it's because they have such a hard time accepting that someone could be better than them in the thing that they have created their identity around, especially if they have a five wing, because there's the individuality identity of it. And then the five comes in with the competency or actually, well, you know what, even if it's a three wing, there's like
got the image.
It's the image. So it's a double-sided, it's either the image or the competency. And so no one can be better than me.
Well, let me ask you this question then. If that's levels of unhealth, what does it look like using our model of moving from like a dismissive avoidant into the one fearful avoidant? What does that look like when they're integrating?
When they're integrating, again, at that dismissive level or like a lower level of health, because at a lower level of health, even if you integrate, you still integrate to a lower level. Like you can't just integrate to like an upper level one, right?
Right.
So when they integrate at a lower level, it can still be just as destructive, because even if they can accept that someone's better than them, then they're imperfect.
Right.
And so then now I'm worthless and I have no identity and I'm not the party host friend.
And you're pulling away to get people to come and console you, but they're never going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because you're not asking for help.
Yes. But then as fours integrate and become more, so the thing is, as they become more like level-headed and not like I am the best, everyone else is trash, as they start seeing people as like whole people, I think a problem for fours is that they're so wrapped up in their own identity and what is my identity, where do I fit in, what is this, that they have a hard time at lower levels seeing other people as people who are just as complex as them, who have roles beyond their identity. I see a lot of fours who are like, you are the smart friend and that's all you can be. You are the smart friend. That's your identity. That's it. You can't also be the pretty friend or the funny friend or whatever. You can't be a complex individual. And I think that's a lot to do with their own struggle for identity. And then as they find their identity and as they are able to start looking outward, they can start appreciating people as more whole individuals who are multifaceted. And that's able to bring their view of others up. And then they're like, ah, yes. Okay. We can both be good at something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. And now that we're both good at something, we can collaborate and make something great. And so instead of having to compete with your friend to be the party host, mm-hmm. you team up and make the best Halloween party in fucking existence.
Yeah. That's one thing that I think is interesting about the frustration, because frustration as a word, I think for me, has like a pretty negative mm-hmm. context. But fundamentally, and I mean, maybe this is going back to the other word for it, idealist, it's all about like dreaming up a better future
mm-hmm.
would be a more positive way to view it, I think. It was like
mm-hmm.
the reason why your frustration is happening is because you know that things could be better than they are now, whether mm-hmm. that's, you know, for the one, the world in general as like a morally good place, or for the four, you yourself could be more fully you, like more authentic, mm-hmm. more rich in your diversity of experience, or we haven't got to the sevens yet, so I'll leave that for, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to comment. I was just feeling the vibes. We're talking about fours. I was getting my feels. I was just like, oh damn, the dreamers.
Yeah. Are you ready for sevens?
I'm ready if you are.
All right. Moving on to sevens. So starting with the sevens attachment style.
Good old anxious preoccupied.
Anxious
just preoccupied. Just like me.
So anxious preoccupied is negative view of self and positive view of others, which I'm not sure. I haven't come to whether or not I agree with that.
Should I consult our resident seven?
Yes, go ahead.
Resident seven says no.
No.
Incorrect.
Incorrect. Okay. We'll get into the meat of it then. All right. So seven's thought is, I want this relationship to be awesome. Can you confirm that?
I'll ask him. Your thought on relationships. Is it, I want this relationship to be awesome?
Romantic or not?
Are we talking romantic? Or I think we're talking all relationships, right?
All relationships.
All relationships.
Definitely it has to, I want the relationship to be awesome if I'm going to invest any time in it. So if you're going to go deeper than like an acquaintance, yes.
Yeah, which I think
this, confirmed.
Which I think for this, we would be going deeper than acquaintances.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. I'll read this whole excerpt then. Let's see. Sevens in an insecurely attached relationship feel enthusiastic about the attachment and their partner, but fear that the relationship won't stay awesome. As they think about the future, they develop anxiety that one or both of the partners will get bored or the happiness won't last, and devote their energy to occupying the relationship with activities to keep it exciting. Ironically, their partner may find this exhausting, and it can become a source of conflict if the other person doesn't have the same level of energy.
I'm going to push back on some of this, because I think that most of the seven media out there is mm-hmm. very engrossed with seven impulsiveness, which I think is primarily seven wing eights is what I'm guessing. You know, this is just conjecture here. But living with a seven wing six, I actually think that prominent six wing makes it all a lot more even keel. And there's an impulsiveness that you enjoy, but the majority of your time and anxiety about the future is actually about the fact that, like, right now I can control the situation. I can, like, I know that it's good, but in the future, I don't know if it will be good. So it's not necessarily about creating activities, but it's like, what am I doing right now? And how can I keep that going? So I don't have to like endanger not having this really great thing.
Yes. Can you ask the resident seven? can you ask her, does she identify more with mixed negative, sometimes negative view of self, sometimes negative view of others, sometimes positive all around, or negative view of others, positive view of self more?
What do you vibe with?
I would say like it definitely fluctuates based on whether or not I've eaten. But
I'm angry dependent.
I tend towards a more positive view of myself and a less positive, like a more negative view of other people.
So this is interesting because that would put that in, according to our chart, right? A more positive view of self, negative view of others would be dismissive avoidant, is the 843. Which, okay, we have speculated before. If you go back and listen to previous episodes, this has come up, particularly previous triads. We've talked about, okay, is the, I think it was the 7 and 3 maybe that we were going to switch around. No, I think it was seven and one.
Seven and one for harmonics.
Right. Cause we have the nurturing, protective, belonging. Okay. So this is something completely different. I'm going completely off topic.
Well, the thing is another person though, I think changed 7 and 3 though.
Someone else changed 7 and 3.
Yes. We disagreed with them, but they flipped 7 and 3.
But we flipped 7 and 1.
One. I could see 4s as, let's see. I mean,
fundamentally, 4s have some insecurities, which is why they have such high self-esteem. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So which one? I could see 7 positive view of self, negative view of others. 1's mixed, and then 4's negative view of self, positive view of others, because that could come into the like, what is my identity? Like, I see this person and they're great and they have an identity and I want to be like them, and how they attach. And then when they make that attachment style, it's like, yeah, they're perfect, they're great, they're going to be this. And then they don't live up to that. It still doesn't match it. I think it could start as, yeah, you're deep as me. And then as the relationship goes on, you're not as well. That would be more of a mixed as it goes through.
Yeah.
Unless that's just their progress.
I kind of like 4s where they're at.
I know.
I think that that's right for me in my brain.
Yeah.
And I like 1s where they're at too.
Yeah.
I'm
going to message a 4. I'm going to phone a friend.
Own a friend.
Lily is just refusing to answer the question.
Just says no.
No, she's like, no, it's always just positive, positive. Not very helpful.
I would give that mixed.
But then she'll say, but the thing is, she says, if I don't feel secure with someone now, they are not a part of my life except by necessity. So she would keep someone in her life that she had a negative view of if she felt she needed them. And according to her, she still does have those. So I think it's positive view of self, negative view of others, but in denial. 4s are weird. I think we could stick them in either the mixed or positive self, negative others. That doesn't help where we could move the 7s. The thing is, I just haven't met many 7s that have a negative view of self. Even when they're having a little bit of a negative view of themselves, it's more like, oops, I made an oopsie. I do think that at lower levels, there can be a little bit of part of the avoidance is avoidance of self. And they're like, they don't, I've met a couple of 7s who are so like, I need to have my life filled. Because being alone with their own thoughts for even like just a second would cripple them because they don't like themselves that much.
So maybe it's more indicative of 7s at an average to low level health and more of a deeper inclination than how you're interacting with them in the day to day.
Yeah. You know what? It might just also be self-denial, because if you ask most of those people, they'd be like, I'm awesome. But then they don't actually feel it.
It's the thinking versus feeling.
Yeah. That might be the disconnect here, where they think they're really great, but deep down, they don't want to be alone with themselves because of.
I get that. I mean, I think that the last time didn't that come up for me where I was just like, oh yeah, I'm awesome. And then you're just like, don't you have issues though? And I was like, maybe I do have issues.
Yeah. You know, I'll keep 7s where they are.
I think it's rare you're going to find someone in the anxious preoccupied that's actually going to admit that they don't like themselves.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's what we saw with Lily answering me, like, no, never.
It's just, it's a hard conversation to have.
Yeah.
Moving on. So according to the literature, sevens are frustrated by their nurturing caregiver and compensate. They have a ravenous need to consume caring love brought about by that, that prompts them to constantly nurture their own needs as a way of avoiding pain. And they have a fear that closing out any of their commitments or experiences will lead to limits on their freedom. Do you buy that sevens felt frustrated as children by their nurturing caregiver?
The problem is I don't know many sevens, like when they were young. As adults that I've met, most of the sevens I have met have expressed more resentment towards the nurturing parent and had better attachment to the protective parent.
Yeah, I think that tracks. Or like nurturing, feeling either stifled by or like you didn't get enough of the nurturing energy.
Yeah, that they didn't get enough. Like their protective parent was more sound, more stable. They felt like they had a stable environment. They felt protected. They didn't receive enough nurturing.
And I think specifically also like one thing that just came into my head is that when we talk about nurturing, I think it's very common to have parents who think that they're being nurturing, but what you are giving is not necessarily the nurturing that your child needs all the time. You know, sometimes parents have, you know, like nurturing is a cultural construction. Sometimes parents have certain ideas about what is nurturing behavior. And it doesn't matter if they think they're being nurturing. It's what the child is feeling based on that action, you know, like the emotions can still be there. It's not like, oh, you fucked up. No, it's just like, I'm feeling like I'm not getting enough of this particular thing. So I'm going to provide it to myself.
Yeah. Which that matches up with the diagram, right?
Yes. So that tracks, with the existing standard for the harmonics layout and our nurturing protective belonging, because if we flipped them, it would be sevens are rejecting their protect or not rejecting. I'm getting ahead of myself. That's next episode. Sevens are frustrated by their protection object, which, you know what? All the sevens that I've met, super into boundaries. I could maybe be convinced by an argument, but I don't know if it like matters all that, you know, like I'm not like, oh yeah, that doesn't fit. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about for the sevens?
No, no, I think we covered it.
Wrapping up. Question of the month for specifically the object relation triad, but we would love to hear from anyone and everyone who will send us things.
Literally anyone respond at this point.
You don't even have to send us your Enneagram type. We'll try to type you on stream and you can laugh at us for getting it wrong.
Yeah, you can enjoy that. We'll guess. Tell us if we were right. I would listen, I would love, I know this is going to be a tangent and we just got off a tangent. that's probably going to be edited out. I would love it if we could do a like guess my type episode where we have people send us details about them and we have to guess, and then the next episode we just reveal what we got right. We could do like a mini catch up and like see like but no one would do it. No one would respond.
We wouldn't get a lot of bite.
No, and I don't even know if I would get a lot of bite on Reddit. I could ask it multiple times maybe throughout, and I could maybe get
it. Would have to be a form response though, like if we're going to do this scientifically, because what's going to happen is that some little asshole out there is going to be like, I am going to give you all of the wrong answers.
Yeah.
Question of the month, 2s, 5s, and 8s, we'd love to hear from you. Everyone else, we'd also love to hear from you. Are you a gift giver, and what kinds of gifts do you give? What's your process for gift giving? There's like 10 million questions in here. I'm sorry, I didn't narrow it down very well. But just talk to us about if you like giving gifts and what that looks like for you. You can find us at anythinggoes@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at anythinggoes. Maddie posts all of the questions that we have on Reddit. So if you go down to the Enneagram subreddit thing.
Maybe I can make us an Enneagram Reddit.
I don't know how Reddit works. So I'll trust you with that. Anything else?
I'm good. Bye.
Bye.